Hey, welcome back to another edition of Nude Hippo, the podcast. I'm Tony Lozano, and we're here to interview another spectacular guest. This time, it's Good Morning America's Ginger Z. I have known Ginger forever. I'm excited to get into this. And this week, producing this episode of Nude Hippo, the podcast, from the other podcast, And Friends, because every week we'll have a different member from And Friends here helping me produce this show. This week, it's Kimmy Spoons.
Woo!
Kimmy, are you excited about the whole Ginger Z interview?
Yeah.
Now, so this is in like three parts. This is a big, spectacular show. And the reason why is because we're going to play this brand new interview that I just did with Ginger Z. I flew out to New York to go to the Good Morning America set and hung out in her dressing room to interview her. But after that, I'm going to play my other interview that I did with her just about a year and a half ago, which you helped me produce.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes, yes. Because
she's a sweet woman.
She is a sweet woman. She's amazingly talented. I've known her for years. Back when I knew her, she was a mess. And she admits to this because she had written a book, which we'll also cover in the second interview, called Natural Disaster. I cover them. I am one. That's an interesting story. We'll get into all that. That you were there for. But first, we're going to get into. She has a new series of children books, three part series.
Really?
Yes. It's Chasing Helicity is the series of books. Here I am with Ginger Z, talking about her new book,
Chasing Helicity Into the Wind.
The following is a Tony Lozano podcast, an Opie show on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. This is Nude Hippo, the podcast.
Ginger, we're in your dressing room.
Yes, we are. It's very intimate, isn't it?
I love it.
Welcome to my space. I'm going to warn you right now, there are loud people that will probably bust in mid-interview.
That's fine.
That's life.
Oh, that's how that happens. So, okay, let's back up. You were actually on my show, my old TV show, Nude Hippo. You
yes,
were a
I
reporter.
Was.
And I was just talking to the meteorologist. What's his name?
Dan.
Dan. Mm-hmm. Dan, I was telling him because he had to look me up to find me in the audience because I was just in the audience at Good Morning America. And we were talking about Nude Hippo.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, that's a wonderful name.
Yeah.
I went, well, it's a double-edged sword, though. People go,
Nude.
Right. They don't know if it's a kid show or a porno.
Yeah.
I mean, they have no idea what to expect.
It's a big question.
When you used to do it, is it still on your resume, number one?
Yes. Actually, it is number one. I don't even put Good Morning America. I say Nude Hippo.
What was the reaction you got?
Well, so I will use it as an example. In television, especially in news, when you are contracted, you're basically owned by the station, right?
Right.
Your name, your likeness, your voice, everything.
Yeah.
I can't tweet something without the backing of my place because they're protecting you, which
of
is
course.
A good thing. So that Nude Hippo was the first yes I ever got in my career.
Really?
So you obviously had some great connections to somebody at NBC because I couldn't believe they said yes because I had been turned down for things with much less sultry names.
And people ask me why you did it, and I always tell them, and correct me if I'm wrong, it gave you the freedom to do more than what you were already doing as a meteorologist on TV.
People see me, at that point, they were seeing me for 3 minutes at a clip, at best, and I had to give them information.
Yeah.
And I had a chance to smile, I had a chance to have maybe a second or two of personality, but not much.
Right.
And in Chicago, I look back now, and I'm so grateful for the time that I had in every hit.
Yeah.
But this gave me something that I hadn't yet been able to do, is give complexity and depth, because people see a snapshot of you on television.
Right.
They don't know who you are, what you do, if you're funny, if you're not funny.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you a full 3D look at a human. And
right.
so I think that having other ways to, infiltrate people's homes, because that's what I'm planning to do for the world, this gave me a platform. So I'm always grateful for anything like that. But that was definitely a first, where I knew I could do it and I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And also I'm just a yes person. I'm a person that says yes unless I think it's going to really hurt me or I think it's going to be a really bad idea, which I definitely didn't think it was going to be a bad idea.
Well, this also, and this is why I always tell everyone, it gives you experience.
Mm-hmm.
It lets you work out and find your actual television presence, you know. So doing weather has always been your passion, but did you actually want to be on TV when you were first studying?
At all.
You were thinking of being a scientist?
I don't know why I'm here. I actually, seriously, so many reasons I don't know why I'm here. I pull into Times Square sometimes and I'm like, what's going on? how did this girl from Michigan, right. who loved storms, who yeah. planned on being Helen Hunt, that was yeah. really what I wanted to do. You know, yeah. I had seen storms.
From Twister, you're talking about,
yeah,
Helen Hunt.
Yeah, the summer between second yeah. and third grade was yeah. my first introduction to severe storms.
Yeah.
I watched them come across Lake Michigan. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with the weather. That point forward, I liked it. It was yeah. an interest or a passion of mine.
Yeah.
I then saw Twister in high school. I think it was sophomore year.
Yeah.
That gave me a hook. That yeah. gave me a goal. I'm yeah. going to be Helen Hunt. Yeah. I'm going to be working for a university in storm chasing. So I started yeah. looking for colleges that let you storm chase.
Yeah.
Then in 98, so right a year before, the year of graduating, the summer before, we had a derecho and it took out most of West Michigan.
Yeah.
So it was like solidified then.
Yeah.
That one I watched a lot on the news, so mm-hmm. I kind of was introduced more to what covering weather would look mm-hmm. like. I wasn't against it, but I still had in my head, I'm Helen Hunt.
Yeah. And
so until I went to college, I did an yeah. internship at the kind of pushing of one of my professors. He said, I really think you should check out TV. It was like mm-hmm. a backhanded compliment, by the way, because everybody else I went to school with is like at NASA telling rockets to go up, and I'm like yeah. telling people that yeah. we had... boating on Lake George
right.
today, you know,
right.
like
right.
maybe that was a level yeah. of responsibility I was yeah. ready for. But really, I think he saw that I could communicate science.
Yeah.
Then when I did that internship, I happened to do it with a weather king in our industry. His yeah. name is James Spann.
Yeah.
It was that fortuitous moment. And then yeah. I thought, I'm going to be James Spann and Helen Hunt. And that's pretty much what I've become.
Yeah. And you've done it well. I mean,
thanks.
It's because you're passionate and you're knowledgeable. So mm-hmm. that helps you get to where you are. I remember having you on the very first podcast of Los Angeles Friends, and we had mm-hmm. Eddie Volkman on,
yes.
the former DJ in Chicago. And his dad was Harry Volkman.
Yeah.
And that's when we discussed about Harry Volkman was the first person to give a tornado warning on television.
Isn't that
and that
special?
Was because the government didn't allow it back then. They didn't feel that they thought people would panic.
Yeah.
And so they were like, we can't be doing it.
They should panic. It's a
exactly,
tornado.
Exactly. and yet that is now the norm.
Yeah.
I mean, and look at how much warning now can you kind of give for
oh
a tornado?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, tornadoes, we know when there's going to be a deadly outbreak.
Yeah.
I can say 2 days in advance yeah. often, which is a scary thing to think that
yeah.
this region
right.
will have the potential for deadly tornadoes.
Yeah.
Down to 24 hours before, you can really start to get it even smaller. And then the day of and the moment of, I'd say within 30 minutes, you know, most of the time. There are, yeah. of course, exceptions, but they're rare.
Yeah.
Now, our science has gotten to the point, and the warning coordinators and the way that we do this has gotten so good,
mm-hmm.
I'd say. There's a lot of room for improvement,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love, you know, so many things in science that we can
yeah.
get better at and in forecasting. But 30 minutes gives you that time. I always like to say, though, when I see that there's going to be a violent day, the days in advance and that morning of, I say, you have hours right now.
Right.
Hours to make a decision. If I'm a mother and I have children and I live
yeah.
in a trailer, I say, this is not the safe place.
Right.
I'm going to go find a safe place today that will
yeah.
let us be there
yeah.
during the hours of 2 till 5 when
yeah.
I know that there's a possibility. Worst case scenario or best case scenario is nothing happens in the town
right.
north of you
right.
is the one that's impacted.
Right.
Worst case is that your trailer's gone, but
yeah.
you are safe in that shelter. And I think that those 3 hours that you know, protect you and your family, that's where we're at right now. We know
yeah.
how to do that.
Yeah.
We can get you there. And it is such an investment that you have to make, and it
yeah.
ends up being a personal responsibility then. And that's what I'm always trying to get out is like, this is up to you, you know, here's the information and now
yeah.
it's on you.
Has this been a bad season for tornadoes or is this?
We are well ahead of schedule of average. So
yeah.
we've had a couple of really quiet years.
Yeah.
So this all plays into
right.
people's psychology of, is it bad? Is it, you know,
right.
we've had worse.
Yeah.
We've had more in certain
yeah.
months. But we have more than 1,000 now, and that's hundreds, I think about 200. I have to look at the numbers,
yeah.
Above average. So,
yeah.
yes, we're above average at
yeah.
this point in the season.
Yeah.
We could have nothing for the next
right.
2 months, and then all
right.
of a sudden, that's how you get average, right?
So but in comparison, really are people, how many more lives have been saved
oh
because
my
of that in comparison to what we used to have?
Oh, that's the beauty of
yeah.
it, is now we have the ability to say this is coming,
yeah.
and the fatality numbers
yeah.
are so low.
Yeah.
I mean, really shocking
yeah.
and stunning to see. Even
yeah.
in flooding, I was talking to my uncle who lives just northeast of Conway, Arkansas, where
yeah.
they're seeing the flooding,
yeah.
and they had their family farm, his wife, my aunt, Jana, their family farm is gone.
Yeah.
But they were able to get livestock out.
Right.
They were able to obviously not be there because of warning.
Yeah.
And it's pretty special to be able to see that. Yes, you're going to lose everything, and it's devastating. I mean, that doesn't take away from what it is.
Yeah.
But you didn't lose your life.
Right, because that you can replace is those items.
And
people
do.
You save lives.
All day, every day.
I know,
right.
I
so it's really special to see it get better and better and better. But I have great hope that in the future, there's even greater things we can do. So this past fall, I was in Hurricane Michael, and I was standing in the eye wall of a Category 5 hurricane. I say standing. I was in a fortified building. watching a 12-foot storm surge wash homes off their foundation. And I thought, I don't know if I need to see this ever again in life.
Yeah.
This is a lot.
Yeah.
And this is the worst we've seen since Andrew. Only four ever in the United States. That type of feeling, when I left there, I met the people that survived, and they were so lucky to survive. And I said, why did you stay when we knew this was this strong? And for the first time in my career, every single person said, I don't have a car.
Yeah.
I don't have money.
Right.
And I thought, my mission has changed.
Yeah.
We're really good at forecasting.
Yeah.
We know where it's going.
Right.
I don't need to be that person anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, I do to an extent. I need to go with a bus with the American Red Cross and do the rescue before the rescue.
Right.
And that's what we have to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And that has been the story for a lot of people.
Yeah. So I think the rescue before the rescue is my future. I think partnering with someone like the Red Cross, going in, knowing, hey, we do this thing within 2 miles. We know where these are going. You know, and the taking the people with us, it's the same thing as going for those 3 hours, saying, hey, this is likely going to happen. If it doesn't, worst case scenario is we bring you back home, but you can bring everything with you. You can bring your pets. You can bring whatever, you know, memorabilia you want.
Yeah.
And then we give you a place to stay, and then we bring you back.
Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
I think then if the town, you know, it's not your town, we bring you back. And I think that's the future of this, is the rescue before the rescue.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I absolutely do. Talk about your book. Now, you have several books now.
I know, weird.
And this is this is a series of books for middle school kids.
Yes, so this is like a 8 to 12 is the target age, but I've had adults say that they're reading them and liking them. I've had, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you love weather, you'd be great. If you just love a little excitement and adventure, you're going to be great. And if you love a good female lead character, I think you'll really like it too. But it's for boys and girls, certainly, to get them into science. There are a lot of hidden gems, including the title character, Helicity, which is my favorite variable in tornado science.
Yeah.
So I wrote these books hoping that we can make things like Helicity mainstream. Because if we can understand where the weather is coming from, and we can have a little more touch of it, I think people will respect it. And I think people will start to just care more about nature.
The title of the latest book is Into the Wind.
Into the Wind.
I remember you telling a story once about, as a child, you used to just love to stand and feel the wind.
Yeah.
Is that basically where this comes from?
No, I think that title is taking her, it's kind of the evolution of who Helicity is, because for the beginning, the weather is chasing her.
Yeah.
Then she's learning a lot about the weather. She is now leaning into the weather a bit. And then in the end, I hope that this character kind of grows as much as I did in 38 years.
Yeah.
She grows in a couple of years. And so the weather has taught me, and especially these extreme circumstances, has taught me so much about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to share that through a character so that other kids and adults and whomever can learn these life lessons that I've been able to see over and over and over after each disaster.
And you go around doing book tours, you meet people. How cool is it to be inspiring to young kids, especially young girls?
This is my dream come true. This is all I wanted. When I went to the publisher originally, I wanted to do a baby book about the science. I had no intention of writing a trilogy for tweens, let alone a memoir about depression.
Right.
All of that came from wanting to write a baby book. It doesn't even make any sense, but now it does.
Yeah.
And I think that it was all supposed to happen. I was told when I was in seventh grade, I had moved to a new school, and I got my first B on a paper I wrote. And I went to the teacher, and she said, well, maybe writing's not your thing. She didn't say you're bad at writing.
Yeah.
She didn't say don't ever write again.
Yeah.
But in my little sensitive mind, I put a label on myself. You're not a writer. And until I wrote these books, and the publisher said, wow, this is special. I was like, wait, so me? You think I can write? And then it went on the New York Times bestseller list. And it's like, well, how is this happening? Yeah. So it taught me a lot about myself that I didn't even realize that I was kind of holding myself back. So I've learned that. But meeting the kids that are reading this specifically is everything I've always wanted, because I went into this business wanting to be Helen Hunt and James Spann.
Yeah.
And I think what I want to go out of this business is there was me growing up with Mr. Wizard. He was so inspirational science-wise.
Yeah.
Then the next generation had Bill Nye.
Right.
I'd like to be that next scientist that America looks to, or the world. and be the first female that people do, because I think that's where everything's going. Mm-hmm. We just need the face. And if it's not me, it better be Helicity.
That's
and I better
right.
be able to produce
that's
it.
Right.
Like, if I'm getting too old, fine. Whatever. We'll put, like, a YouTube kit on it. But I want to be a part of it.
Well, I always tell, especially my interns, mm-hmm. I'm like, go after everything you want to do and mm-hmm. don't let yourself hold you back
yeah.
because you will be the one that stops you.
Yeah.
I went, and you could, like, when you apply for jobs, you could apply for 10 jobs. You only get hired by one. That's a winning. Nine didn't want you, but you still got, just go after it. Go after it. Go after it. Go after your dreams. So I love that you have achieved your dreams.
Thank you. And I didn't even know that it was... Even an inkling of it was possible. So
but
that's,
you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
You tried, whether it was doing the books or whether it was trying to be on TV. And if you don't try, you're not going to succeed.
Nope.
But if you do try, there's no guarantee, but there's damn a good chance, you know. Ginger, I know you have to go.
Yes,
I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
I love your husband. You know that.
Okay, thank you. I do too. He's cool. He's all right. Thanks for enjoying my nasty little room here.
Like I said before, it's a nice size New York apartment. This is huge.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Ginger.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so that was Ginger Z. Coming up, Ginger Z. I love doing that. You're listening to Nude Hippo, the podcast. We'll be right back. There's more to come. Stick around.
A lot of anchors do that. Yeah, it's a thing.
Are you ready?
Oh, boy.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Howard Sudbury.
And I'm Steve Baskerville.
Let's do it again.
What? That was good.
No, we messed it all up.
What's wrong? What? How?
It was going good, and then it went south.
No, it didn't. Well, if that went south, see what happens now.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Howard Sudbury.
And I'm Steve Baskerville.
Back to you on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Great talk radio isn't dead. It just moved to a better place. RadioMisfits.com.
I need an agent.
All right, so check out that and other Opie shows at opieshows.com. Now back to...
Ginger Z!
So a couple of years ago, Ginger was in town, so we got to interview Ginger Z about her book...
Natural Disasters, I Cover Them, I Am One. I still have the book on my shelf. I got halfway to it, but it gets intense.
Yeah, isn't it? So even just the first page, just if you don't know what I'm talking about, go to Amazon and go look up this book, and you can preview the first page. And if you're not excited about reading this book, oh boy, there's something. I would be afraid of you. That means your life is way more than I can handle. So, Ginger.
Yes.
Your book just came out.
It sure did.
Natural Disaster. I Cover Them. I Am One.
Yeah. It's it. I mean, it's in a nutshell. It was the easiest title to write.
There's a lie in this book that I can relate to. There was a special I was working on myself called I'm a Mess.
Mm.
And let me tell you, you went through a lot more than I could imagine, or at least admitting to a lot more.
Yeah.
What was the process of actually coming to the conclusion of really releasing all this information?
You know, the process was a long one because I wrote everything first, and then I thought, well, that's way too much. I got to take it back. This is not going to be a tell-all because I won't have a job anymore, which is scary. And then it was rearranging it in the right way that it had the most impact in the way that I wanted it to.
Yeah.
And I had to be honest with myself at the end of it and say, what I want this to do is to help people who have the same issues that I had or similar issues. And that's what I went with. And that's why I started the book the way I did, with a very powerful statement and a big secret that I hadn't even told some of the people closest to me.
Can we say the first line of the book?
Yeah.
10 days before I started the job at ABC News, I checked myself into a mental hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone through this book. Oh my goodness, it's nonstop with stories. Was it therapeutic, or how hard was it to actually relive a lot of these stories?
There were times where I had to stop writing, and I would just break down because it was like, in my therapy, I had learned to not run away from things, to not block things, but memories were coming back that I had blocked, that I had turned off, and that I was like, whoa, oh, I did do that. A lot of guilt, a lot of things that I had to work through again. So it was hard, but it was so worth it because this was my biggest issue, was not being honest with myself.
Yeah.
This is the most honest I can be, not just with myself, but with the world. And I like to go big.
Yeah.
So I might as well go for it.
you basically said you went through depression for a decade.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. And not every day.
No, no.
That's not how it works. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely dealt with it.
And
for
your times here in Chicago were one of the highest days that you were struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a story about you talking about being passed out underneath a Chicago bridge during a blizzard and a homeless woman even
offering me her hat.
Yeah.
That is when you know you've hit rock bottom.
What did you think when that happened?
It was a slap in the face at the moment. It definitely sobered me up for that moment because I had that much to drink. What it did and what I looked back at it for was to make a change, you know, to make a change in my life, not because of drinking, but because of where I had set these strange expectations and I had started living a life where I wasn't being me.
Yeah.
So for a very short time, I think it actually helped.
Yeah.
I think that it kind of pulled me back and said, whoa, look at all the stuff you have right now. Don't go ruining it.
Yeah.
You were so lucky that you didn't get arrested, that you didn't have, a lot of other things that could have happened, and you're fortunate.
Yeah.
So now take this and get better. And I did get better in that way, and then I'd go and mess up something else.
was being on TV in Chicago, so you're getting feedback from people, good and bad, was that pressure also making it more difficult for you, or would you have gone through all of these hurdles even if you weren't on TV?
I don't know if I would have gone through the same hurdles. I think I'm sure I would have gone. And that's what I think this book will be applicable to people who aren't on TV, because everybody goes through certain things like this and can apply the dating somebody at work, the getting to a new city and feeling isolated and alone and lonely, the loneliness.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that didn't have anything to do with being on TV. It might have been heightened here and there because of it, but no.
There are some great stories in there. Like, there's a point where you committed mail fraud.
Mm.
And it's basically that's
the most illegal thing I've ever done, by the way.
Is it really?
It is. I'm so like straight, boringly in that way. Yeah. Yeah.
you were about to get married.
Yes. About to get married. And I woke up the night after the morning after we had put the invitations in the mail.
Yeah.
6 weeks and one day, which is like etiquette wise, very improper. Before the wedding, and I woke up and I said, I can't do this. And so I physically ran to with the mailbox that we had put them in, and I waited for the postman, and I cried. And I was crying so hard standing by this, and he helped me. He opened that big blue box, and it was like angels sang. And I was able to take out every single one of those, which is completely illegal,
and he
helped me. I don't know who he is, but he's bad. He's a bad postman.
But then you retrieve them, and then they eventually
That's the other part of the story. And that's the perfect thing. That's the perfect part of the story, because, you make this strong decision, and then you're like, actually. And that's how I lived and still live too much.
Yeah.
A little wishy-washy. I allowed my then fiance to say, no, you just have cold feet. Put those invitations back in the mail. It took another 3 weeks, and then I was ready to call off the wedding.
As people were flying into your wedding.
Oh, yeah. No, it was...
It was your grandmother, right?
Yeah.
That kind of spoke to you.
My Oma, which is Dutch for grandma, and she really... It was like a brick hitting me in the head, and she just had to look me in the eye and say, you don't have to do this. Yeah. All I needed was permission from someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, that was one of the issues that I've had for a very long time, too, that I couldn't give myself permission, that I had to get permission from others.
Yeah.
That's good in some ways, and it's good when you're in kindergarten.
Right.
But it is not good in life.
Well, you also had trouble saying no.
No.
Yeah.
No is a very difficult word still for me.
Yeah.
And in my career, it's worked out very well.
Yeah.
And in my personal life, it has been real bad.
But over time, you've learned to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm even by putting this book out.
Yeah.
I'm saying no.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let a stigma stop me from telling my story.
Right.
And so this is the most powerful no I've probably ever said.
You now are a thrill seeker.
Yeah.
You like to do things, jump out of airplanes, swim with sharks and all that. What is that?
What is that?
What is that?
That's living life.
Yeah.
That's what I actually began. Yeah. I had the opportunity to do paragliding. Well, I've been storm chasing since I was in college, so people would find that thrill seeky. But to me, that's just science. As far as the adventures go, ABC gave me opportunity to go paragliding, and right after I had come out of the hospital, started my job, and was in intense therapy, I had this opportunity to jump off of a mountain and fly.
Yeah.
And there is something so therapeutic mm-hmm. about doing that, because it was not jumping off of a mountain to die.
Yeah.
Like I had probably thought of many times before in my worst points. It was jumping off of a mountain to live.
Yeah.
And it was, I saw the real, yes, there's adrenaline in it. And of sure. course you get kind of addicted sure. to that. There's part of that. However, going out there and realizing that this is part of life, and I'm in the sky and I'm in yeah. the atmosphere, and there's like this really cheesy moment of like arms out, woo, I'm flying. Yeah. That's life. Can you imagine I didn't get to do that? That would have been horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even here in Chicago, I remember when you scaled the side of the mm-hmm. Wits going down yeah. where you get to walk on the outside of the building. And I remember seeing the cameraman shoot the angle and I freaked out just looking at that. And I wasn't even out there.
No. And I think I've never had fear of heights yeah. or any of that yeah. stuff. So that's never bothered me. But yeah. I go into it now, not with a feeling of I could fall,
yeah.
but that I could fly, you yeah, know, yeah. that. So I have this completely different outlook on what it means. Yeah. And those probably 1% of people that do that for recreation mm-hmm. all have that too.
You've been getting responses since the book has come out. Mm. Mostly positive, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know how I handle the negative.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Not only do I embrace yeah. the mean comments yeah. now, or a mean tweet here yeah. and there, I encourage it yeah. because I actually feel like yeah. I should take the responsibility, since I've become this kind of fortress mm-hmm. of being able to handle it, like yeah. bring yeah. on the barbs and what do you guys got?
Right.
I feel like there are a lot of times these people, they actually are looking for mm-hmm. a connection, and I want to be the person who reminds them there's a person that they've reached,
yeah.
Give them a little responsibility mm-hmm. for that, but then also make them realize that they're being heard, because I hope that even if it's a response to a tweet, maybe that will change their yeah. day. Certainly can't hurt.
I can agree with you, because I work in radio yeah. and I'm on the front line of listeners. And over the years, I've gotten some angry, ugly callers.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I every once in a while, when I have time, I'll sit and talk to those angry, very vulgar listeners and eventually be able to turn them around oh, yeah. and just get them talking. And a lot of times, that's what it is.
They wanted a conversation.
They want someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And then their only way of really doing that is by, you know,
being
getting
angry.
Attention. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The idea of the book actually did not come out. You didn't say, oh, I'm going to write a tell-all book about
no.
me. You were originally writing a book for preschoolers.
Yes. That's what I wanted to do. What am I doing here?
You ended up with this. Explain that.
I went into a publisher and I said, I've had this idea. I really want to do science and kids, and I want to write a board book, because I was going to have a baby, and that's what babies read. And then we started talking about a character that I've had in my head for a long yeah. time that's semi-autobiographical, about a young girl who's a storm chaser. Yeah. And they said it would be really good to write that as a middle school age. Mm-hmm. And so I took their advice. They know what they're talking mm-hmm. about. And I started writing the ideas for that book. Mm-hmm. And they loved that. But as we did that, I was telling them stories about storm chasing. And then stories about storm chasing led to stories about my life.
Mm-hmm.
And stories about my life somehow led to, and then I ended an engagement.
Right.
And then we're all having a good time talking yeah. about, and they said, that's a book.
Yeah.
And it started there. And in that meeting, I didn't even say anything about depression.
Yeah.
That just all came later.
And were you open about depression at that point, or was it still a secret? Because people here at Channel 5, mm-hmm. I've worked with a lot of these people. None of them knew about it.
No.
I mean, there were some hints. I remember some talking about you being a serial dater.
Yes.
Yeah.
But serial dater, yes.
But they were concerned, but they weren't really as concerned as now if they were read the book and like, holy moly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in there.
So when you were pitching the preschooler book.
Yes.
Were you already open on the depression, or is this book really the?
This book is it.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, my best friend from when I was 13 was in town, and she did the conversation with me at an event.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things she said is, I learned a lot about my best friend in this book.
Wow.
And that was yeah. wild to hear.
Yes.
Because again, I didn't want to just come out and tell a nice story.
Right.
I want to come out and tell a real story.
Yeah. The best way I could describe this book is just like, I got a hold of Ginger Z's diary. Everything is in here.
And the funny part is it is so watered down.
Yeah, right. Yes.
You have no idea.
But it's watered down because of legal reasons.
It's watered down for legal reasons, but it's watered down because there's no reason to go that far, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we can make the changes and start the conversations we need to with the stories that I've told.
Right.
And I don't know that it would have helped to go any farther.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have changed the end result.
Well, it's a beautiful book. And
thank
I'm
you.
Also looking forward to the children's book as
Yay.
Well that you're coming out with.
We'll go backward. And you know what? Someday I will do a board book.
You don't drive?
I don't. I mean, if I have to.
Oh, okay.
But it's not preferable.
Yeah.
You don't want me on the roads.
Oh, I don't drive either. I'm
you
the
don't?
Same way. Yes.
Oh, great.
So I'm like, wow, I get that.
Yeah, no. I and people like control of driving. That's mm-hmm. one place where I'm like, I'll let go. Whoever wants to take control now, thank you. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to finish off with the fence.
Yeah.
I find that fascinating because I have always said that I thrive on other people's energy. And when you start talking about the fence, and I've heard you talk about this before, I'm like, I know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
Describe this.
It's so important. So this is one of the biggest tools that I learned in therapy. And I feel like it's something everybody should have known a long time ago. Right. I didn't learn it when I was a kid. And so it's as simple as if you are upset and Tony's having a bad day and you start freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
My immediate reaction prior to getting this help would be to freak out with you mm-hmm. and then to freak out more than you and mm-hmm. then to add to your freak out and to make everything bigger, 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 right. bigger. And really, I was addicted to the chaos of the drama of what you were feeling.
Yeah.
And then I would make it mine. And it was almost selfish. Like, now we're both really mad and now we're both going to blow up. And it would always have something to do with me.
Yeah.
And usually it had nothing to do with me. And so the fence is where I put up the fence.
Yeah.
It's like I envision a physical fence mm-hmm. between us right now mm-hmm. and you're having your feelings. Mm-hmm. And if I had something to do with that, I will take responsibility and say, I'm sorry that I caused that.
Right.
But I don't have to feel what you're feeling
right.
in response to that. I feel my feelings.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
It's so simple, but we all don't do it very often. We take on each other's energy.
Yeah.
And it's a very good practice to employ walking around with your fence, because you can still have empathy and you can still be a human and you can still react and have a conversation and learn about somebody, but you don't need to take on their issues.
Right.
And the minute you do that, it's not even good. It's not good for either party.
Yeah.
So now you're the most helpful when you have the fence up.
Yeah. I learned a lot just from that.
Good.
I also learned that you do a nightly check of your day.
Yeah. This is where I sit in what I've feel finally. So my biggest issue too was not being honest with myself, running away and saying that didn't happen.
Yeah.
This check-in at the end of the day doesn't allow that. Yeah. I have to go back and say, how did that go?
Yeah.
It's like a debrief after, it's like a meeting you'd have after work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what worked, what didn't.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
All right. Before we leave, you've been up since what time?
Oh, just four
and
Eastern.
Right now it's 9 Central.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And you're pregnant. Congratulations.
Yeah,
second child. You're running around in heels doing all of these interviews. How do you keep it going?
Oh, well, I was conditioned. I didn't sleep much in Chicago here, so I was really conditioned from that. No, I think I being happy is actually really makes life a lot easier.
Yeah.
So I don't waste a lot of energy in those other times on other things. And so I'm able to sustain longer.
And I think you know that this let's use a terminology of weather, this hurricane that you're in right now, of GMA and all this stuff is fantastic. Takes up a lot of your time and your attention. It won't be there forever.
It won't be there forever. Yeah. And I know that.
So
and
I hope you're
I'm
at
taking
least
it.
Or enjoying
I'm
as much as you can.
It.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
Say hi to Ben. I enjoy his stuff
I
all
will.
The time.
I will.
Thank you, Ginger.
Thank you.
That was me and Ginger Z. I will say that Ginger talked about it, because I brought it up, about how she feeds off of other people's feelings. You know, if someone is angry, she used to pick up their anger, you know. And I said, well, I thrive on other people's energy. I think they're similar. I don't know if we have the same thing. I do think mine is a little different. I don't think mine is as empathetic as hers, because she would really feel their emotions, and I would more ride on people's energy. So and that really comes down to, even if I'm doing something I absolutely love, if I'm surrounded by people who are just not into it, I just go, wow, I don't want to do it. I just lose all energy in it. And Ginger also said that she used to have a hard time saying no. She still does a little bit. Hard time saying no. I think she didn't say no to me to do this interview because she has a hard time saying no.
Or maybe she just has a soft spot for you to actually do it.
I would like to think that. But I do think that while I was interviewing her and looking right at her, I could feel what she's been going through, being up since early morning, traveling, doing the interviews, and then sitting down with me and just thinking, I just want to go eat. But let me tell you, she gave her all, and I'm telling you, this book is absolutely amazing. If you want to find the book, it's at bookstores everywhere.
To find out more about Nude Hippo, the podcast, go to nudehippo.com. Everything is there. All the socials, all the videos, all the gossips, everything you need. I have to thank for producing this week. From Ann Friends. Check them out. That's a fun podcast. Kimmy Spoons! Thanks, Kimmy.
Oh, you're welcome. Come be our friend. And, you know, I want to give a special thanks to you, executive producer Tony Lozano with opishows.com. Opie is hippo spelled backwards. O-P-P-I-H shows.com. And distributor Ed Silla from radiomisfits.com.
Until next time, from all of us here at Nude Hippo the Podcast, stick around.
Listen, subscribe, and rate Nude Hippo the Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Just search for Radio Misfits.
Proceeding was a presentation of Opie Productions. Find our other great shows wherever you find podcasts, including opishows.com. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of Opie Productions.
Tony, can you shut up?
This is Minutia Men with Rick and Dave.
On this week's Minutia Men with Rick and Dave.
Five guys fighting at
Five Guys.
An obscene wedding invitation.
Hey, is that a cooler full of penises?
What happened on the day I was born at Wrigley Field?
Rick's brush with Governor Jim Edgar.
And we interview Ezra Mohawk.
Rockstar.
Who is the singer of the Schoolhouse Rock song Interjections, among many other things. All that and unlimited tangents on this week's Minutia Men.
The Tony Lozano Podcast and Opie Production on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
RadioMisfits.com.
Coming up on the next episode of the Car Guys Report, Informed Automotive, we'll talk about types of used cars to avoid. Plus, is nitrogen really worth it for your tires? I'm Mark Vernon. Join me and Lou Costable for these stories and more on the Car Guys Report, a Tony Lozano podcast and Opie production on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
Hey, coming to the Radio Misfits Podcast Network and Friends, starring me, Tommy.
And me, Kimmy.
And me, Sam.
Come meet your new best friends.
Hey, if you want to listen to our show, this is what it sounds like exactly.
It's all about those conversations you can only have with your true friends. So come meet your new friends, Tommy.
Kimmy.
Sam.
Right here with Ann Friends.
Me want you as friends.
RadioMisfits.com.